This is Cross Currents. I'm Julie Kane. Disputes are cropping up left and right between gig workers and the companies they do work for. Policymakers are intervening, but their legal solutions will take years to enact. A new bill in California would allow gig workers to bargain collectively, but legislators won't vote on it until next year. And last week, courts ruled that Uber and Lyft drivers can't file class action lawsuits because drivers signed an arbitration agreement when they were hired. To find out why the law is so slow to adapt, KALW's Hanat Baba talked to William B. Gould IV. He's a Stanford Law Professor Emeritus and the former chairman of the National Labor Relations Board.
What is the gig economy?
Well, the gig economy is an extension of some of the characteristics that went into this independent contractor idea. The idea is that there's flexibility and autonomy in some measure built into the role of both the consumer and the employee. But of course the concept of an independent contractor is an old one. And the idea of creativity and autonomy is an old one also in the employment relationship. The fact that I can work my own hours. Well, there's nothing inconsistent between that and the employment relationship. The fact that I can be more flexible in terms of the time of day I want to work. Again, there's nothing inconsistent. The fact that I'm working for other employers, that my commitment to this particular employer is of indefinite duration. These are all characteristics that in broad terms are associated with the independent contractor status that the companies contend for in the gig economy. But they are very old concepts that are built into so-called traditional employment relationships.
So can we go back then and tell me about what it was like for an independent contractor in decades ago? What would be the main difference between then and now?
Well, the main difference, there really is fundamentally no difference between then and now. It's just that there are a number of new features that have come about through this. I mean, the main difference is, you know, are you doing work which is essential to that particular employer? In other words, they're driving cars. Well, that's the work of Uber and Lyft, and that argues for employee status. I, on the other hand, as a law professor, I may write an op-ed piece for a newspaper. Well, the newspaper, there's nothing inherently connected between my op-ed piece and as much as I would like it to be, and the newspaper itself. I'm truly an independent contractor.
Can you tell me about the moments of historically the litigation or the attempts at creating new laws or making change, and how come they didn't work?
The states have become more active in recent years. You may know that, for instance, Seattle has enacted an ordinance in the city which promotes collective bargaining for independent contractors. They've said, we don't want to go through this long litigation. And you may know that right now there's considerable litigation right here in San Francisco involving Uber, involving Lyft. There are legal obstacles in connection with that legislation.
What are they?
Principally two things. One is the doctrine of preemption. The doctrine of preemption, which says that not only is federal law supreme in certain areas, and particularly here in collective bargaining, but that it, because of its supremacy, it excludes state and local regulation. Mm. There is another more formidable obstacle, and that is antitrust law. Because given the fact that independent contractors are not regarded as employees, they are regarded as business people. And business people cannot, under antitrust law, collude for the purpose of setting prices. And the law, in its medieval majesty, regards these has regarded, in many instances, these independent contractors as businessmen.
So what's a gig worker to do between the preemption and the antitrust laws, and they just want to make a living,
yes,
possibly get benefits, possibly organize?
Yes. Well, a number of ideas are being put forward. One is that some of the legislators have said, well, we've got to have a third way. We've got to have a new category of individuals. But that kind of thinking proceeds upon the assumption that the gig economy presents issues which have not been presented before. And I think that that is erroneous. Those issues have always been with us since time immemorial. See, the problem with this so-called third way is nobody can say what the consequences of carving out a unique classification in between employees an independent contractor would be. You see, the companies have it fine right now because they have a workforce that is flexible, and they like to be flexible. I think most of them do. They like to have autonomy, but they don't have the basic protections.
So,
if you're discriminated against because of race or sex, too bad, because you're not an employee. If you want to organize into a union, too bad. Or if you want to get unemployment compensation or workers' compensation, no, that's not for you because you're not an employee. I think that it may be that rather than legislation, some of the unions, the Teamsters are playing a particularly leading role in this regard, are going to have to sit down with these companies and find some answers. You see, not only does the government not have an answer in terms of what the consequences would be for a new classification, but also there's no consensus about labor law generally. And if you begin to open this issue up legislatively, you're going to have a Donnybrook of a wide variety of issues that Congress has been struggling with for the past 40 years or so to update our labor laws in other respects. And I think that this makes legislation, government intervention, a relatively bad bet, no matter what happens in this fall's elections. And I think the most straightforward practical answer comes through an attempt by the unions and companies to get together and hammer out practical answers to these questions.
Sounds so gloomy.
I don't mean to be. I don't mean to be gloomy. I think that you know, if we look at this basic framework we have in the industrialized countries, and here in the United States, it's a good one, and we can build on it. You know, it does no good to say that there's a Bill of Rights for workers, and then to deny them effective remedies, deny them effective coverage. And what we have to do as a society, through either government intervention, and I am very much down about government intervention, or through the collective bargaining, which has been a major strength for this country and for much of the West in the past, is to come to grips with the problems we've identified.